Now it's time for the Hawaiian Eye Show, sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. This is your weekly informative hour all about eyes. Learn about cataracts. Ask a question about glaucoma. Find out how diabetes affects your eyes. Stay tuned for an entertaining and educational program about eyes and eye care. Call in to have your questions answered by the doctor. Now, your host, Harvard-trained eye surgeon, Dr. Christopher Tortora.
Good morning, everyone. It's time once again for our regular weekly program about eyes and eye care. It's called the Hawaiian Eye Show, and it's sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. We're going to be here for the next hour talking about glasses and bifocals, about laser beams and eye surgery. We can talk about your cataracts or your contacts, itchy eyes, droopy lids, or whatever it is that interests you. If you'd like to join in today, give us a call. Our number here, 521-8383. We'd love to hear about your experiences and answer your questions. If you can't call in today, or maybe you're feeling a little shy, you can always email your questions to us. Our email address is eyes@hawaiianeye.com, and we can answer those questions over the air in coming weeks. Look us up on the web while you're online, www.hawaiianeye.com. You can find archived radio programs from the past few weeks, and you can subscribe to our podcast if you want to listen to the radio program on a regular basis. Subscribe to our podcast on the website, www.hawaiianeye.com. You can also find us on Twitter. Go to twitter.com/Dr. Tortora, D-R-T-O-R-T-O-R-A, or Facebook, facebook.com, Hawaiian Eye Center. We're in all those places. During the next hour, we'll discuss eye news from around the country and around the world. Sometimes we'll do an eye quiz to test your IQ. We'll have a lot of fun today, and sometimes there's even a few surprises. Now remember, all opinions expressed on this program are those of myself and the other medical doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center. I'm an ophthalmologist, or IMD, which means I'm a medical doctor specializing in the eyes. We're going to try to be very consumer-oriented today, make an effort to give you the best possible practical advice. But remember, I can't see through the telephone, so I may have to recommend an examination before I can tell you exactly what's going on in your eyes. So sit back, relax, and enjoy an hour all about eyes. Well, what's come up this past week in the office? Well, a number of things, but I thought we'd talk a little bit about pterygium. Pterygium is a very common condition here in Hawaii because it's related to sun exposure and outdoor activities. And people who spend a lot of time outdoors, like surfers and construction workers and people who spend a lot of time at the beach and walking around, particularly when they don't protect their eyes with sunglasses, tend to develop a little fleshy growth on the inside corner of the eye. It can be on the inside or the outside, but more commonly it's on the inside. And this growth starts to move over the surface of the eye, so it appears to be moving across the colored part of the eye. In fact, what's happening is that the growth is actually on the cornea, which is the clear window covering your eye. And because you can't see that cornea tissue because it's clear, it looks as if it's growing across the iris or the colored part of the eye, but in fact it's on the surface and superficial lesion. This superficial growth, the pterygium, is usually related to sunlight exposure, to drying, to irritation of the surface of the eye. And as it grows or becomes larger, it can become irritated. It can make the eye look red. It can make the eye feel scratchy or feel like something in there. It can grow large enough that it can cause scarring or damage to the surface of the eye that can actually affect the vision, even long-term effect on the vision if it gets big enough without being treated. And so most people find these pterygia to be somewhat unsightly and ugly and irritating because they're sore or uncomfortable. And when it reaches the point where it's bothersome, where it feels like there's something in the eye, or if it's getting big enough that it may interfere with the vision, or if it's growing at any point, then that's a reasonable reason why it should be removed. So pterygium's a little fleshy growth on the surface of the eye. It's kind of pinkish because it's got a lot of blood vessels on it, so it looks like a kind of a pinkish or red growth on usually on the inside corner of the eye, most common in surfers and other people who spend a lot of time outdoors. And how do we treat it? Well, pterygium can sometimes be treated with eye drops. Sometimes if it's red and inflamed and it's just kind of recently become inflamed, we can use eye drops to quiet down that surface inflammation or irritation. And oftentimes that will help to make it look and feel a little bit better. And if that works, and then you use lubricating drops or moisture drops to keep the eye comfortable, then maybe nothing more is needed at that point. But sometimes, or often, even in spite of the drops, it continues to be irritated and red and uncomfortable and maybe still growing. And so at that point, the growth or the pterygium can be removed with a surgical procedure. Now, surgery for this type of growth has actually made significant advances in recent years, and the procedure is a little quicker and better, faster recovery than it used to be. And although it can be slightly uncomfortable after the procedure for a day or two, generally it heals pretty quickly, and most people are seeing an improvement within a few weeks after the procedure. Often the eye continues to look red or even looks a little more red temporarily afterwards, but not really uncomfortable beyond the first day or two. And as it heals, you need to be a little bit careful not to rub the eye, but generally it heals nicely, and the result in most cases looks good, looks natural after the growth has been removed. Sometimes there's some scar tissue which can affect the appearance of the surface of the eye after surgery. Sometimes it grows back again. You know, so the same factors that were there to start with are still there. If they are, then it may very well grow back again. So first step in treating this type of thing is to advise people to wear sunglasses, glasses that block the UV light, the ultraviolet light. That's going to help prevent that pterygium from getting bigger, prevent a new one from growing back if you've had it removed. And the second step is using moisture drops or tear drops in your eyes to soothe the surface of the eye, to lubricate the surface of the eye. But if that doesn't work, then surgical removal of the pterygium is a good option and works quite well. So when I first started doing this type of procedure 20 years ago to remove the pterygium, we didn't have a lot of great ways to keep the growth from coming back. There you could treat with some radiation treatment. Over time, we developed some medications that could help prevent it from coming back, and we still use the medications sometimes. But the thing that's really been a significant boon or advantage to this type of surgery is the increased popularity of a procedure called a conjunctival graft. A graft is a bit of tissue that is taken from somewhere else in the body and used to cover a defect that's created either surgically or from an injury or something else. And so what's happening in the case of a conjunctival graft procedure is that that pterygium or the growth is being removed, and then once it's removed, there's a little defect there, and that defect needs to be covered in order to give the best possible healing. So we take a little bit of the tissue under the eyelid where you don't really need it, and take that and put it back where that pterygium was so that the surface heals better. Now, it used to be you'd take this little bit of tissue and you'd have to put really tiny stitches, 8 or 10 little tiny stitches to hold that thing in place. Now, you can imagine having 8 or 10 little tiny stitches in your eyes, probably not the most comfortable thing in the world. So people were not that thrilled with the healing process on these grafts. And the stitches also made the graft a little bit more inflamed and irritated and caused the eye to be more red for a longer period of time. But what we learned is that we can use what's called tissue adhesives or tissue glues, which are glues made from natural substances found in our bodies, which last for a period of time, a week or so, to glue or help to hold down the new tissue, the graft tissue. And when we use these tissue adhesives to hold the graft in place, that stays in place. The adhesive works for the first week or so, and then the graft grows into its new position. And the tissue adhesive disappears and is reabsorbed by the body because it's natural substances that are found in the body, substances that are involved in blood clotting. Because if you know, if you've ever seen a scab, it's really tightly stuck together. And those same things in that scab that hold that scab together can be used to glue tissue together, and that's why we—that's how we developed tissue adhesives. And so the tissue adhesives are used to hold the graft on down to the surface of the eye, and eventually they are reabsorbed or absorbed by the body, and then the graft grows into its new position. So for the first couple of days, you have to be careful not to rub the eye because you don't want to displace or move that graft. It's real hard to put back if it gets out of position. And we want to make sure at the end of surgery that it's in good position and that the glue is holding it in place. And then once it heals over the a month or so, the graft starts to look like normal tissue that was there previously, because it is the same tissue. It just comes from a different place. And as it grows in and becomes a part of the surface of the eye, then you can't really even tell it was there. So these new surgical approaches have made it much easier, quicker, and faster recovery to treat these pterygia. And so people who have unsightly pterygia, or they're irritated, or they're finding that they that it's interfering with their vision or growing, ought to have them removed. And it's something that we do quite frequently at the Hawaiian Eye Center. All right, we're going to take a short break. When we get back, we'll talk about some eye news. And later in the program, we'll be taking your calls.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
When you have a cataract, your vision gets gradually worse over time. You don't see as well.
Having the corrective surgery and now having the vision of a much younger man, I can see again.
Our state-of-the-art surgery center offers safety and convenience without a hospital stay. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, HawaiianEye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C-2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
Life has never looked better with Hawaiian Eye Center.
The Hawaiian Eye Show phone lines are now open. Give us a call at 521-8383 with your questions for the doctor. If you're calling from the neighbor islands, call us toll-free at 888-565-8383. Now, back to your host, Harvard-trained eye surgeon, Dr. Christopher Tortora.
Can you see me now? Hawaiian eyes. Can you see me lost?
Ah, yes, Hawaiian eyes. And here we are back on the Hawaiian Eye Show. You're listening to Dr. Christopher Tortora. If you have a question for us, we can answer your questions if you call us here at the station. 521-8383 is the number to call. On to the news. Well, we have an article here that's kind of interesting. It goes along with what I've been saying for years here, which is that you need to be careful. If you like to take vitamin supplements and you like to take different things for your health, you want to be sure that you're taking them for the right reasons. And it turns out that many supplements, many common nutritional elements, nutraceuticals as they're sometimes called, that you can buy in the drugstore in the form of supplements or pills, actually may have other types of side effects or conditions that may affect other parts of your body. So here's an article about intake of calcium and iron supplements and the fact that that seems to give people a higher risk for glaucoma. Let's see here. It says, supplementary consumption of the oxidants calcium and iron may be a risk factor for the development of glaucoma disease, according to a study in investigative ophthalmology and visual science. The investigators reviewed the 2007 to 2008 National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey to assess the relationship between self-reported glaucoma and the supplementary consumption of calcium and iron. The cross-sectional study included 3,800 participants who were 40 years of age or older and underwent both the interview and examination portions of the study. Participants were interviewed about their use of dietary supplements and antacids during the preceding 30-day period. Data pertaining to the supplementary intake of calcium and iron were aggregated and divided into quintiles. Information regarding the presence or absence of glaucoma, as well as demographics, comorbidities, and health-related behaviors were observed via an interview. Okay, so what do they find? According to researchers, participants who consumed 800 milligrams or more per day of supplementary calcium or 18 milligrams or more per day of supplementary iron had significantly higher odds of being diagnosed with glaucoma compared with those not consuming supplementary calcium or iron. So they had a pretty high confidence level when they did that, and they tested it for statistical significance, and it seemed to be significant. So it said concurrent consumption of both calcium and iron above these levels was associated with an even greater odds of being diagnosed with glaucoma. A clear dose-response relationship between quantities of supplementary calcium or iron was not found. Okay, so it doesn't look like there's an association between how much you take and whether you develop glaucoma or not. So these results suggest that there may be a threshold intake of iron and calcium above which there's an increased risk of developing glaucoma, according to the researchers. Longitudinal studies will be required to assess whether that this oxidant intake is a risk factor for development and progression of glaucoma. So apparently there is quite a bit of research involved in what's called oxidative stress and the development of glaucoma. And so this is something that was that the researchers thought that they should study to see if there might be some kind of relationship. So it's really hard to tell with a study like this, although they looked at almost 4,000 people. So the numbers should be enough to draw some kinds of conclusion. But it is difficult because there are so many confounding factors that may give you accurate information on this type of study. And so it's interesting that it shows an association, but you can't prove from a study like this that for sure there's a problem. It really requires further looking at, further studying in a more formalized way to make sure that that there is in fact a true association between those two things, taking calcium and iron and developing glaucoma. So why is that? Well, let's say of those 4,000 people that were surveyed or were studied, let's say a bunch of them who took calcium and iron also took vitamin C and vitamin D, I don't know, some other things. And maybe it's not the calcium and iron that caused the problem. Maybe it's the vitamin C and the vitamin D that caused the problem. Well, how do you know? Well, you don't, because you're not screening for the other things that they're doing. You're not saying, are there other possible confounding factors that may be an issue? So this type of study is a little bit limited, but it is interesting to see that studying different types of dietary intake may play a role in the development of glaucoma. So something to be aware of. And so basically studies like this just reinforce my overall feeling that when it's time to go and take supplements, whether it's vitamin supplements or other types of supplements, things that are available over the counter that people just go, well, you know, I've heard good things about it, so it must be good for you. I mean, calcium, you got to take calcium because it's going to make your bones stronger. You know, iron, you got to take iron because it's going to make your blood stronger. So why are you doing it though? I mean, do you have a weakness in your bones? If you don't have a weakness in your bones, why are you trying to make your bones stronger, right? If you don't have an anemia or a problem with the iron in your blood, why are you taking more iron? You know, so don't fall into the trap of saying this supplement is good for everyone, so let me go ahead and take it. Because as time goes on and as we see more and more of this type of study, we see that some of these types of things that people just take because they think, you know, oh, it must be good for me, actually may have reasons why it wouldn't be good for you. So it's possible that the benefits would outweigh the risks in some people, but without a risk factor, then the likelihood is the benefits don't outweigh the risks. So there are specific supplements that seem to be helpful or useful with certain types of conditions, certain types of diseases systemically, and eye diseases as well. And if you have a condition like that, it's worth doing that. It's worth taking the supplement because you know that there's been some proof that there's some benefit to doing that. But if there's no proof and no reason, then maybe not the best thing to do. Along those lines, I do know that there have been a number of studies that suggest that there are certain types of vitamins and supplements are helpful for different conditions affecting the eyes, conditions like dry eyes and macular degeneration. So really knowing that certain types of vitamins, certain types of antioxidants probably do have a healthful effect, what I usually counsel my patients is I say, well, why don't you just eat a nice, healthy, well-rounded diet? Make sure your diet includes fresh fruits, includes green leafy vegetables that contain some of these antioxidants, things like spinach and kale and collard greens and other types of greens, cabbage and dark green cabbages, and some of these green dark green leafy vegetables. Go ahead and consume those as part of your diet, and that should help to keep things as healthy as possible. Okay, we have another article here, moving on in the news here, an article that says visual outcome in eyes with age-related macular degeneration is worse at the time of cataract surgery. So, I'm sorry, it says visual outcome is worse in eyes with macular degeneration at the time of cataract surgery. So, basically, the conclusion is if you have macular degeneration when you undergo cataract surgery, then the likelihood is that the vision outcome is likely to be worse than someone who doesn't have macular degeneration. Well, that's kind of not really news. I mean, if you have a problem affecting the inside of the eye and you treat a different problem, cataracts, so if you have macular degeneration, which affects the inside of the eye, and you treat a different condition, cataract, which also may affect the vision, your vision might improve from treating the cataract and probably will improve, but it's still not going to be perfect because you have another thing that's affecting your eye, right? So if you have macular degeneration and you have a cataract removed, you're not going to see quite as well as someone who has a cataract removed and has no macular degeneration. Well, that's pretty straightforward. But there are some other things from this study that are interesting and that give us some valuable information. So let's go ahead and read a little bit more about this. So let's see. It says here, eyes with signs of age-related macular degeneration at the time of cataract surgery had a longitudinally worse visual outcome than patients without clinical signs of the disease, according to a study in the Journal of Cataract and Refractive Surgery. However, most patients with concurrent visually significant cataract and macular degeneration had better distance vision 10 years after surgery, cataract surgery, than before the procedure. Okay, so what does that tell us? Well, if you have macular degeneration and you have a cataract removed, that suggests that your vision is going to get better and your vision is going to stay better for at least the next 10 years, at least according to what this study is telling us. And if you have cataract and you have macular degeneration and your friend who has surgery the same day as you has cataract and has no macular degeneration, the likelihood is your friend's vision is going to end up better than yours. Kind of makes sense. But the good news from this study is that people who have cataracts removed, despite macular degeneration, despite early changes in the back of the eye that may be affecting the vision, still end up with better vision, and that better vision lasts a long time. The 10 years that they looked at it in the study, people still had improvement or had better vision than they had in the preceding time before they had the cataract removed. So that's good news. So let's see. It says patients having cataract surgery were evaluated over a one-year period, a clinical eye examination and measurement of vision in the eyes was performed preoperatively and postoperatively, as well as 5 and 10 years postoperatively for eligible patients. Patients were divided into functional groups depending on postoperative signs of macular degeneration and postoperative corrected distance visual acuity. According to the investigators, the rate of decline of vision with age was faster in patients with macular degeneration compared with patients without any other problems. The slope of the visual acuity decline was similar in the two subgroups with macular degeneration. So in other words, both groups of people with macular degeneration, vision went down about the same, whether they had cataract surgery or whether they had no cataract surgery. So that suggests that cataract surgery didn't significantly worsen the macular degeneration in the study. After adjustment for age, there was a mean loss of a couple of letters of vision for people who had no other problems besides the cataract over time, and a little bit more vision loss in patients who had macular degeneration at the time of cataract surgery. As they got older, the vision loss over time became more significant. So what does that tell us? Well, it tells us that if you have macular degeneration, that's going to affect your ability to see whether or not you have cataract surgery. If you have a cataract removed, the likelihood is your vision, if it's a significant cataract that's blurring your vision, likelihood is your vision is going to improve and it's going to stay better even if you have macular degeneration. So study doesn't tell us a whole lot that's new, but it is reassuring to see evidence that once you've had the cataract removed, the likelihood is that vision is going to stay improved even if you have some early macular degeneration problems. So we are going to take a break for the news. And when we come back, we're going to take some phone calls. So I want you to think about what you want to ask us and go ahead and give us a call. 521-8383 is the number to call. We'll be happy to try to answer your questions. And we'll be right back.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
Hawaiian Eye Center offers complete eye care for the entire family. Now, cataract patients can reduce or eliminate their dependence on eyeglasses with premium cataract care in as little as 15 minutes. Their experienced surgeons have extensive cataract and general eye care experience. And they proudly welcome their newest eye surgeon, Dr. Stephen Ree. Dr. Ree brings a wealth of experience to the Hawaiian Eye Center team. To schedule an appointment with a member of the eye care team, call Hawaiian Eye Center today at 733-2020 or visit the website at hawaiianeye.com.
Hawaiian Eye Center offers you complete eye care for the entire family. Now, cataract patients can reduce or eliminate their dependence on eyeglasses with premium cataract care in as little as 15 minutes. Advanced technology lenses are designed to provide good vision for distance, near and in between, with less dependence on eyeglasses. When cataracts blur vision, a short, painless procedure helps. If you have a cataract and want back youthful vision, call Hawaiian Eye Center at 733-2020 or visit hawaiianeye.com.
The phone lines are now open at 521-8383. On the neighbor islands, it's a free call, 1-888-565-8383. And now, here's Dr. Christopher Tortora.
This is Dr. Christopher Tortora. You're listening to the Hawaiian Eye Show, and we're talking about eyes. And I'm a doctor, so doctor my eyes. There we are. If you want to give us a call, our number here is 521-8383. We'd love to hear about your experience. We'd love to answer your questions and see if we can help you with questions about eyes. So 521-8383 if you're calling from here on Oahu. If you're calling from the neighbor islands, write down this number in case you need it. It's 888-565-8383. We've been talking about a few articles that have shown up in this the news over the past week or two. And there's an article here about embryonic stem cell-derived tissue for the eye, which has been transplanted safely into human patients. So first I want to talk a little bit about this tissue so that you know what we're talking about here. It's the embryonic cell-derived tissue is called RPE, which stands for retinal pigment epithelium. The RPE, or the retinal pigment epithelium, is the structure inside the eye just under the retina, which leads to, which nourishes and provides support for the retina tissue. The retina is the tissue, of course, that allows us to see. It's a sensitive nerve tissue, very thin, very delicate, that lies along the back of the eye. And it requires the support of the RPE, or the retinal pigment epithelium, in order to keep it healthy. So it says here, this prospective study assessed the safety and tolerability of subretinal transplantation of human embryonic cell-derived retinal pigment epithelium in two patients, one with advanced Stargardt's macular dystrophy and the other with dry macular degeneration. At 4 months, the cell seemed to have transplanted into both patients without abnormal proliferation, teratoma formation, or graft rejection. Vision improved from hand motions to 2800 in the steady eye of the Stargardt's patient, and vision seemed to improve a little bit in the dry macular degeneration patient as well. The authors are uncertain at this point whether any of these visual gains were due to the transplanted cells or the use of other medications that they used or placebo effect, but it was encouraging to see that there was a that these cells were tolerated well by the body. So basically what this means is that these tissues, these cells in the eye which were damaged in the particular conditions that they treated, the macular degeneration and the Stargardt's disease, these cells are damaged, they don't work properly. And so the idea is if you put these embryonic stem cell-derived tissue in there, this tissue should be able to, in some sense, take over the function of the damaged tissue. And so whether or not that actually works or helps, it's hard to say for sure because they didn't get the real dramatic results from the study. But what they were really looking for was whether these cells could be placed in the eye and could be tolerated well by the patient without any significant problem in the eye itself or systemically related to this type of transplantation. And so what they found is it did seem to be safe in doing that, and they thought maybe there was some effect. So over time, this technology may be able to be developed in a way that might help people who have severe vision loss, particularly central vision loss, from some of these conditions that affect the retinal pigment epithelial cells. So something that's good to know. What else? We've got a article here about a new test for dry eye disease. It says the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has granted Tearlab Corporation a waiver for its Tearlab osmolarity system. Last year, the Tearlab system was denied a label waiver under the Clinical Laboratory Improvement Amendments of 98 because the FDA said the company had submitted insufficient data. Last month, the FDA said it would issue the waiver after the company submitted acceptable labeling. The system gained 510K clearance in May of 2009. So why is this important? Well, this is a new test that is designed to try to figure out whether the tear film on the surface of your eye is normal or abnormal, and some abnormalities in what's called the osmolarity, the thickness, the amount of salt or minerals dissolved in the tear film, may have a predictive role on whether dry eye disease is going to be a problem or not. And if it is abnormal, then different things can be done to help address or treat the problem. So having this test readily available is a positive thing. So people who see a lot of patients who have dry eye conditions may want to have this type of testing available. If it requires a CLIA clearance and it doesn't have a waiver associated with it, the downside of that is that it can't be used routinely in a doctor's office because it needs to be used only in a clinical laboratory under certain specific conditions. And basically what makes the difference between things that can and can't be used in an office versus in a clinical laboratory have to do with how difficult it is to do the testing, how much the testing is influenced by outside factors that may or may not be controlled in just a standard office setting. And so this test was proven to be straightforward enough and reproducible enough and simple enough to do in an office setting, so it did get that CLIA waiver. And so that's a good thing, which means that that test should become available to us in our offices over time and allow us to look at the osmolarity of the tear film in an office setting without sending people to a special laboratory to do that. Now, that's how much that's useful, how useful that is, how helpful that is. The jury's still out on that. We haven't seen a lot of good studies that show a correlation between the tear film osmolarity and symptoms of dry eyes. There have been a few studies that suggest that there may be some relationship and that it may be beneficial to treat people for dry eyes when they have early changes in the tear osmolarity, but we don't know this for sure yet, and so this is something that is still being investigated, still being checked out. Speaking of things that are investigational and that we're still trying to figure out whether they work well or not, a lot of people ask about laser cataract surgery. Cataract surgery over the past 20 years or so, since the most recent significant advance in cataract surgery, have been removed with ultrasound energy to remove the cataract by making a tiny incision, what's called small incision surgery or no-stitch cataract surgery. A small incision is made in the eye and the cataract is removed through that incision using ultrasound energy and vacuum. Recently, new laser technology has been developed that can assist in certain steps of the cataract procedure. So it doesn't mean that you no longer need to use the ultrasound or the standard cataract surgical techniques. It just means that the laser is used to assist in certain portions or certain elements of the technique of the cataract surgery. What is the advantage of this, and what is the state of the laser? Well, the laser is still in its early generations. We're the first generation of these lasers, And they do a few things that make certain steps of the surgery perhaps a bit, a bit more reproducible. And so, particularly for an inexperienced surgeon, this may have some advantage. But there are still some drawbacks in the technology where it's not as accurate as it could be in testing and measuring what needs to be treated, so the laser cannot be as effective as it might be because the technology doesn't allow it to measure accurately enough to really do what it needs to do, because there's too large a margin of error. In other words, if the laser could zap 90% of the cataract, that would be great, but it can only zap maybe 60 or 70% because they can't measure exactly where the cataract is well enough to tell the laser where to fire to help prevent damage to other structures in the eye, right? So there's a little problem with the ability of the laser to do what it's best at doing, and there are some other issues associated with the way the laser does what it needs to do. And so this laser-assisted cataract surgery, while it's a great gimmick, it's a great thing to say, hey, I had my cataract done with a laser-assisted technique, it really makes almost no difference in the performance of the surgery itself in the vast majority of patients and in the outcomes. It doesn't make you heal any faster. It doesn't make your outcomes likely to be any better in the majority of cases. Now, there are things that the same laser can be used for to enhance cataract surgery. Using the laser to help correct astigmatism at the time of cataract surgery may be helpful in giving people better vision without glasses. Of course, there's always an additional charge for these types of things because that correcting your vision, making your vision better without glasses is not covered by insurance. And that can also be done surgically, but it probably is done a little bit better with the laser because it's more reproducible with the effects of the laser. So if you need astigmatism corrected at the time of cataract surgery, probably a laser is a good way to do this. It can be done with incisions as well, as I said, but maybe that's not quite as reliable a way to do it as it is to do it with a laser. So for that, I think the laser can be helpful. But just to get the cataract out, having a standard cataract procedure with the laser, I think probably doesn't provide any significant benefit. So for people who are just having their cataracts removed, the standard small incision cataract procedure using ultrasound or phacoemulsification is probably the just as fast, safe, and effective in experienced hands as the laser-assisted cataract surgery. So what does that mean? Well, what I think it means is that in the future, probably the laser may play a significant role. How far into the future? Well, I don't know. Depends how the technology is developed. Depends how people use it over time, how accepted it is by patients, whether the laser treatment is paid for by whether it's Medicare or by the patient or what, because doctors are not going to invest in very expensive technology and hospitals are not going to invest in expensive technology if they can't have some kind of reimbursement for it. So if they're not getting paid for the work that the laser does, then it's going to be more difficult to adopt this type of technology in terms of the cash flow of a hospital or of a surgery center or whatever it is that is adopting the technology. Okay, so kind of interesting, laser-assisted cataract surgery. We'll have to see where that goes. And, I bet in 10 years we'll be probably using the laser-assisted cataract surgery on a regular basis in certain types of cataracts. But for the moment, it doesn't provide any significant advantages for the majority of people who have cataracts removed. So ask your doctor if you are curious about it. But for the probably 90-95% of the people that I take care of with cataracts, the laser assist with the cataract surgery would really not have any significant effect or benefit on the procedure that they'd be doing. All right, we've got a caller standing by, but we're going to have you wait for just a minute while we take this short break. So if you can just hold on the line, we'll be right back and take your call.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
With the latest technology, cataract care is often a fast, painless procedure with a rapid return to normal vision and normal activities.
It doesn't hurt. It just takes, 15, 20 minutes the most, and you're out. That's it.
We strive to make your procedure safe and painless. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, hawaiianeye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
The phone lines are open at 521-8383. And from the neighbor islands, 1-888-565-8383. Now, back to Dr. Christopher Tortora, our host of the Hawaiian Eye Show.
All right, welcome back, everyone. And here we are in the last segment of the Hawaiian Eye Show, and we do have a caller standing by. We've got Tony in Kailua. Hi, Tony. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, doctor. How are you doing?
Good.
The question, I had both eyes done with cataracts, and they replaced the lenses. I did this about 5 to 10 years ago. And the problem I have is that I seem to have different kinds of vision from each eye. It's like the Fonz. In other words, when I close one eye and I look at the letters on one eye, they're long and thin, and the other eye, they're short and stocky.
Is this when you're wearing glasses or when you're not wearing glasses?
When I'm not wearing glasses and when I'm wearing glasses, both. Because I normally don't wear glasses, but I use dark glasses for, driving around and what have you. But on distance, I can seem fine, but when I look at, try to read something, I got to wear enhanced magnifying glasses or whatever you call it, about 275, and it seemed to be okay. But my problem is that, they give you those things to look at, those lines, and, if you close one eye, they seem to bend. While I close one eye, they bend one way, and I close the other eye, they bend the other. They bend the other way.
How do you do with both eyes open?
They kind of try to get together, whichever eye is a little bit stronger, I might see a little bit of a bend going one way.
Yeah. Does it bother you? Do you have
what bothers me is when I'm trying to watch television and without any glasses on, because, I'm far away enough to see it. And, I like to watch the stock market, and when those numbers come out with how much the stocks are, they sometimes they're blurry or sometimes they jump over. In other words, it looks like it's 782, but it's really 872.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I don't know for sure what's causing that, just based on hearing you tell me about it. Certainly, looking at your eyes and evaluating them might give me a little better idea. But just as a guess, I'm going to say that probably if this is something that's been sort of the past several years and not something new, then I'd say that probably it has to do with the focus of your vision.
Yeah.
And the two eyes are probably focused slightly differently. Now, this has advantages and disadvantages. The advantage is that some people who have one eye a little bit more farsighted, one eye a little more nearsighted, may have a little more depth of focus and need glasses less for everyday activities. But sometimes when you're really looking at very small stuff, like the subtitles on the TV, or maybe when you're driving, it may be that glasses will bring things into a little better focus for you. And so that ought to be the first thing you try, because that's easy. See if a prescription glass might make that go away.
Yeah, because it seems like it's right in between, because when I'm driving, I want to look at my speedometer, how many miles. I'm far enough away where I can't use the glasses, and I'm too close where I still get a hard time to read it, what I mean?
Yeah, well, you're always going to have that problem because our eyes, as we get older, only have one focus point.
Yeah.
So you can see far, you can see close, but you can't see in between.
It's
see
not
in between.
Where, because initially I thought the guy put the lens, the second time I had the operation on the second eye, I thought he put a different kind of lens where he put it in backwards, but that can't be the case.
No, it wouldn't be backwards. But the it is possible that the focus is a little different between the two eyes. But it's also possible that you've got something going on, you know, inside the eye that's causing a little distortion of the vision. So that's something that needs to be evaluated as well.
I know that astigmatism, would that be part of the problem
too? Yeah, astigmatism might cause that, and that's why glasses might improve that a little bit.
Okay.
Do you have you noticed a significant change since the surgery, or has it been about the same ever since you had the second eye done?
Oh, no, ever since I've had it done, it's been pretty stable, you know. It's been about at least 5 years since I had the second one done.
Okay, so main thing is, number one, is it bothering you? If it's bothering you, then you may want to see about glasses or something to see if if that can help it. Number two is, if it's not bothering you, probably if it's been the same for the past 5 years, it's not anything dangerous or worrisome, so I just leave it alone. But, you know, it's always worth getting an eye checkup and saying, you know, well, I'm having this symptom. Can you explain to me what's causing it? And if you get an explanation, that's great. If he doesn't know but says your eyes are healthy, then that's also good.
Okay, I appreciate it.
All right, good luck with
that. Thank you, doctor. Bye-bye.
So it is not uncommon, whether naturally or following surgery, for people to have a little bit different vision between the two eyes. And sometimes people will say to me, why do I have this difference between the two eyes? Why do I have a problem between my two eyes? And so the answer is, sometimes the answer is that you don't use one eye at a time. You use both eyes together. And how do you feel with both eyes together? And they go, oh, it's fine when I have both eyes open. It's just when I cover this eye and cover that eye that I have this problem. And so usually those things are an optical effect. They have they're an issue related to the optics of the lens and the eye, or the optics of the vision system if you've never had surgery, or you know, something like that that causes a slight difference in the appearance of the image from one eye to the other. And if that only bothers you when you cover one eye or the other, and it's been not something new, you know, if it's something new, you have to check out why is that happening, what's changing in your eyes. But if it's something that's, you know, you've always had, or you, as long as you can remember, you've had it, and it only bothers you when you cover one eye or the other, don't worry about it. I mean, you're not walking around with one eye closed, right? So that's often my advice to people who say, you know, it's a little funny because when I open this eye and then cover this eye, the image kind of shifts. Or if I do this, it's more, the things look bigger. If I do this, it looks smaller. And, you know, and I said, well, how do you walk around every day? Do you walk around with your hand over your eye? And they say, no. And so I say, well, then don't worry too much about it. Certainly always nice to have an answer, to have an explanation for why things are the way they are. And that's one of the things that, you know, we try to do in our office, is we try to really make sure that people leave with an understanding of the conditions that are affecting their eyes and their health as it relates to their eyes. And so we tell, you know, we say we want every patient to leave with something of value, whether it be education or a good pair of glasses, or whether it's treatment for some kind of condition that requires surgery or medicines or other types of treatment. We want people to leave our office with something of value. We don't want you to come in and say, this is my problem, and we say, oh, it's nothing, and you walk out, because that doesn't help you any. I mean, it helps you feel more reassured, maybe, that there's nothing serious going on to affect your eyes, but it doesn't, you know, help you understand any better why you're having the symptoms that you're having. And so this is something that I think is very important, and that we, you know, at Hawaiian Eye Center, we pride ourselves on trying to make sure that people do leave with something of value. I think it just goes down to customer service. It's, you know, you want to make sure that if someone's coming in and either they or their insurance company is paying for your expertise, then you ought to impart what expertise you can along to the patient. I have an interesting article here about drug prices in Europe. It turns out that austerity in Europe is putting pressure on drug prices, that pharmaceutical companies in Europe are not being allowed to charge as much for their drugs, and this is having a ripple effect on particularly European pharmaceutical companies. It says here, profits at pharmaceutical companies have been declining, showing little growth for the last year, as austerity measures across Europe lead to cuts in healthcare spending. Some analysts say this trend could continue for the next several years. the price reductions could have a ripple effect. Profits from sales in emerging markets may also fall because governments in emerging markets refer to the prices set in Europe to determine their own prices. So it says, before the recent wave of austerity measures, drug companies faced relatively low resistance from European governments when they set prices and introduced products. Countries with strong industrial bases like Germany, France, and Britain allowed companies most flexibility in setting prices. Well, apparently no longer. So it says the euro crisis is forcing governments to restructure how they think about medications, according to the Director General of the European Federation of Pharmaceutical Industries and Associations. Because the prices that governments are willing to pay is falling, drug companies are recalibrating their strategies and considering economic factors. They're reducing the number of new drugs in which they invest research money. So that's the biggest danger, is that as the drug companies see their income falling, that they're less likely to invest money in developing new drugs, and that, of course, limits what is in the pipeline for new treatments for different types of medication, different types of conditions. So that could be a problem. Well, we've been here for an hour now talking about eyes and eye care, and I've certainly had a lot of fun, and I hope you have too. I'd like to thank Keanu, MJ, and Will for helping out here in the studio, and I'd like to say thanks to all you listeners for making this show work through your calls and through your email. If you enjoyed our program today, be sure to tell your friends about us. If you learned something new, be sure to listen again next week. Now, if you have a question, you can always email it to us. Our email address is eyes@hawaiianeye.com. Don't forget to check out our website, www.hawaiianeye.com. You can remember that, right? Hawaiian Eye Show, hawaiianeye.com. You can listen to the radio on the website or subscribe to our podcast. Check out our Facebook page, too, facebook.com, Hawaiian Eye Center. And follow me on Twitter at Dr. Tortora, D-R-T-O-R-T-O-R-A. I'm Dr. Christopher Tortora. Thanks for listening, and aloha.
You've been listening to the Hawaiian Eye Show, sponsored by the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, with Harvard-trained eye surgeon Dr. Christopher Tortora. If you have an eye problem, want to get a second opinion, or aren't seeing as well as you used to, make an appointment with Dr. Tortora or one of the doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center in Central Oahu or Hilo by calling C-2020. That's 733-2020. Until next week, here's looking at you.
When you have a cataract, your vision gets gradually worse over time. You don't see as well.
Having the corrective surgery and now having the vision of a much younger man, I can see again.
Our state-of-the-art surgery center offers safety and convenience without a hospital stay. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, hawaiianeye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C-2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.